Good morning. Welcome to Community Focus, a show dedicated to exploring the personalities, issues, and events of interest to southeastern Wisconsin. I'm your host, Matt Nye. Our guest today is author of the book, Becoming Madam Window. She is Catherine Webster. Thank you, Catherine, for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
Now, when we take a title, and if you hold the book, Becoming Madam Widow, in your hands, you think, you know, we have a striking photo of a woman holding a rose, sort of a silhouetted drawing. This is sort of the type of book that we know it's going to be a deep subject. How did you go about going ahead and even having the ambition to create this book?
Well, when my husband died, he died very suddenly, and over a period of 3 days from an accidental situation in the hospital. He was a healthy and vibrant kind of a fellow, so the last thing that anyone would possibly have imagined that he would die. So when he did, suddenly my whole world changed, which would happen to anyone, I guess, when they were in this similar situation. And the picture on the front of the book indicates a woman who's essentially been stripped of everything she knew. And she's in a position where she is trying to determine, who am I now? Now my life has changed so abruptly and so in such a gargantuan way that what do I do now? Because I'm not certainly the person I was before. I can't continue to live the way that I lived before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the drawing on the front indicates. And so in terms of the depth of the subject, yes, I mean, when something happens to you that is huge, like the loss of a partner, you are in a position where you have the opportunity to completely recreate yourself and your life. And that's essentially what my book is about, is what do I do next? Who do I become? How do I deal with everything that has happened to me, and then turn around and make this into a really positive situation. You're in a position where it's a very luxurious opportunity to recreate yourself, reinvent yourself as you have always wanted to be.
I know there are lots of individuals that go through life-changing events, and maybe in the back of their mind they think, I'm going to write a book about this, but they never do. What caused you to actually go through the process in writing this book?
One of the things is, when you have a situation where your partner suddenly dies, you have a few weeks where people who are your friends, relations, acquaintances are sympathetic, they're very kind, they treat you well, but then they go on with their own lives. And so then suddenly you become alone. Nobody really wants to deal with you on that level, where because they can't face your pain with you, and they don't want to be reminded of these kinds of situations. So you're left alone, and you have an opportunity then to do something with it. And the best thing to do is to do something that is either going to express what your experience was in order to help other people, or to just get that whole thing out of your system and say, here, this is my experience. And that's what motivated me, is I went through such a huge learning curve. See, I really thought I was a very smart girl before.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I knew it all. I was very brash. I was very strong. I was very aggressive. When this happened, it was a humbling experience like no other.
And you talk about that your loss was very sudden. Some widows, it's a gradual process of losing their spouse, and yours was very sudden. What's unique about a sudden experience?
You know what? There is nothing really unique. It's always unique. Even if your husband goes through a long process, or your spouse, if it's the other way, because naturally men experience exactly the same situation. Even if it's something that happens over a long period of time, the moment that that person passes away, it is such a immensely mysterious situation that it's going to affect you in the same way, whether it's sudden, like if he was in a car accident, or whether he had a long illness and finally died after a year or two. I have a woman friend whose husband died of cancer, and he was sick for a couple of years, And yet there was something profound about the moment that he took his last breath and how it affected her life.
So take us through what you talked about, that early stage where you are processing. We're very much so. I don't want to belittle the point, but going through the ritual of mourning with people around us, what is it like, and how do you wrap your head around it?
Well, first, in the early going, I find the difference between the way men respond to it and the way women respond is completely different. Women are very sympathetic, they're very warm, they're hugging, they're supportive. Men, on the other hand, look at themselves and say, wow, that could be me. And listen, I'm a little overweight. He wasn't. He was younger than me. This was the response with every single situation, that the responses between men and women were different. But as time went on, no matter who they were, men or women, they wanted to get on with the business of their own lives, and you were left in this situation where you were alone. And I've talked to men who have been widowed, and they say, well, the most profound change is that people who were our friends abandoned me. And I don't think it was a matter of abandoning. It's just people have a difficult time coming to terms with it, and it becomes the pink elephant in a tutu in the room when they invite you to a barbecue or a dinner party, because his absence or her absence at that party is a reminder to people that life is fragile, and people really don't want to fixate on that.
You talked about really conquering what you call the big three: fears, worry, and hopelessness. How do you define those, and how do you begin to conquer them?
Everybody that's walking around on this planet has some feeling of fear. When you have suddenly been left to your own devices, the fear and the business of being alone, those feelings can gang up on you, particularly in the middle of the night when you are alone and you are wondering what's going to happen next. Depending on your situation, some women might find that there are financial issues, which was the case with me, and you start to worry about, how am I going to survive? Am I going to turn into a bag lady? Am I going to be living in a cardboard box? You know, this kind of a thing. But other people just worry about, will I ever meet anyone? What about the children? A whole series of things. And so fear and some of these, and it revolves mostly around fear. Mm-hmm. These kinds of feelings can gang up on you, especially in the early going. And the best way to help with your own personal growth is to just dive right into the fears and just say, well, whatever's going to happen, it's either going to kill me or I'm going to move on. And it's amazing the amount of personal growth. In actual fact, facing those things revitalizes you in some way and makes you feel younger. When you look over your shoulder after a year or 2 years, you take a look and say, well, I can't believe the person that I've become, if you manage the situation the way you should and not just continue to sit there and mourn and grieve. You have to get on with it, and you have to create yourself as a new person.
You take a real brain-based approach to this process. You talk about managing both the left brain as well as the right brain. How do you define those things?
Well, there's certain things that I had to deal with that were more mechanical. Financial things, technology, managing the business of the house. These are the kinds of things that you do because you have to. And then there was the creative aspect, and that was, you know, managing who I was and what was I becoming and how I could change my personal style to adapt to a new me. So I had to manage both of those areas. There were things that my husband did that I didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
He managed all of the technology. He managed the heavy maintenance of the house. I had to now manage everything, and so I had to divide it into tasks and say, well, here I'm going to balance out my life by managing both of these things as effectively as I can, and I've got to find a solution to those problems that are definitely created by me, for me.
It's interesting when you said earlier on that in writing this book, you were also trying to make it an inspirational book. Is this, at what point do you go from that initial part of just figuring out the day-to-day and the processing of the initial emotions to being inspired by an opportunity that you mentioned is really an opportunity for a new you?
Well, after the initial period of bereavement, and I do talk about in the book taking a few weeks to do what makes you feel best. For me, I spent a lot of time alone, but I slept a lot, and that was me processing my grief and adjusting to my new way of life. Once I did that, I had to get up in the morning and say to myself, okay, something good may happen to me today, and I'm going to make sure that happens. And I would start to work on some of the projects that I had always wanted to do. And the whole process of being in the marriage and being in this lifestyle had been an excuse for me not to address them. Now I had no excuse. Now it was just about me and how I was going to go forward with what was essentially a gift for me, and that was an opportunity for a new life. As much as there's a loss, we have to move on to the next chapter. And so what I've been able to do is I wrote the book. I reestablished myself in a number of other creative areas that I had basically let slip over the years because I was so involved in a partnership with my husband, in a business, and also with that entire lifestyle. And suddenly I began to explore things on my own, and I took chances. And people were worried about me.
Obviously, that demands a follow-up question. So, how are people reacting here, and what type of worry do they have?
Well, now people have this newfound respect for me, and it's been inspiring to other women who are either single by choice through a divorce or in the same situation, or some who have never been married, where they're taking it and saying, hey, I can do things with my life too, and it's... That, to me, is the most rewarding part of it, is that I'm looking at other women who are saying, well, if she can do it, then I can do it too, which is really the gist of my book, is to take myself and really heal my imperfections, because I didn't realize when I was in the marriage that I had so many. And when he died, I had a lot of time for introspection and to look at myself and say, well, here's all the areas that I know I've been weak. And maybe there's a fear of intimacy. Maybe there's just some sloppiness in all these areas of my life, and I'm going to fix those things.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with author Catherine Webster. She is author of the book Becoming Madam Widow. All right, just to play devil's advocate for a moment here, it seems to be, you said as you reflected, that in your marriage you were either glossing over or... the dynamic of the marriage didn't allow you to really focus on what you needed to do to become the best version of you. Is there something in the institution of marriage that becomes seductive where we don't work on ourselves as much as we would if we were alone?
Well, this may be a very interesting answer for a lot of people, but I would say when you're in a partnership with another person, then... Yes.
And can you elaborate on that?
Yes. Yes. I think that you avoid doing a lot of the things that you want to do because you've got the perfect excuse, and that is that you have a family or that you have a husband or that you're working on something together. When you are suddenly left alone, this is almost like a gift that you now have the opportunity to do those things and you have no more time or no excuses left. Now you're either going to address it by doing the things that you always want to do, and they don't have to be huge things, but all the things that you always wanted to do or thought you could do or may have been afraid to do, now you've been given the opportunity to do it. So do I have an issue with the institution of marriage? In some ways, yes, I do. I think that they provide an excuse to not do it. If you can operate and do everything you want within a marriage, you're one of the few lucky people in the world.
Well, and let's maybe step back for just relationships, whether it's a significant other or that, you know, long-term dating experience. What do we have to be careful of when we are in a very close relationship with another individual?
Losing who we are. Becoming so involved with another person that you lose your own identity. If you can keep your identity and stay in a loving relationship of any sort, long-term, then you're one of the few lucky people in the world. I haven't been able to do that yet.
And in terms of your ideas to live by, this has been an opportunity where you have obviously filled a book full of ideas. Let's talk about some of those. I know Chapter 7 in your book, you talk about these are some things that we really need to embrace as we live and try to become the full us. What are some of those ideas?
Well, there's Chapter 7 is full of opportunities to for self-examination. And the whole idea is to take a look at yourself and be brutally honest about the things that you like about yourself and the things that you don't. And the things that you don't like about yourself are really hard for anyone, but they are very personal and private. And I don't think it's necessary to discuss it with anyone, but we all have them. And I knew what mine were. I knew that I had problems with intimacy. I knew that there was a certain kind of selfishness. I knew that I was making excuses for myself. In fact, what I was doing was burying fears. And now, if I brought those to the surface and looked at them and examined them, said, you know, here's an opportunity for me to change all of those things about myself. And in fact, that will make me a more effective human being. I'll be kinder. I will be less.
Yes?
We're strong, brash, aggressive characteristics that were to be admired, when in fact, to some people, they might have been offensive. And now I had to be more sensitive to myself and to others.
You have an interesting concept you introduce about the internal demon. What is the internal demon?
I don't know if you've noticed it yourself, but most people have a chattering little voice inside their head that will serve to navigate their outside world. And much of what comes into your mind is negative chatter. And it is telling you all day long what's wrong with you, what you've done wrong, all the negative things that are going to happen to you. And it's like having an annoying roommate sitting beside you on the sofa, chattering away all negative jargon. And I noticed that if you were able to ignore that, or at least come to terms with it and realize that it's not you, but it's just this negative voice, then you would probably be able to accomplish a lot more in your life than you had done. The negative chatter is something that everybody experiences, and I don't even really know where it comes from, but it's just something that everybody lives with all day long.
There's an interesting pivot then when you talk about the fear of success. How is our fear of success and that negative chatter intertwined?
Well, the fear of people always think that they don't try to do things because they're afraid they're going to fail. This is what I felt for a long time, and then I realized, and this was part and parcel of writing this book as well, is that my greater fear was that I would succeed. And when I did succeed, what in the world was I going to do with myself? How would I handle moving away from what was comfortable for me in a particular area of my life, whether that area was great or not great? How would I handle new friends, notoriety, the criticism that would come from people when they looked at the things that I was doing? And that was part of the negative chatter. But the fear of success is a greater fear than fear of failure.
You go through many changes, and then you have individuals enter into your life yet again. You talk about when you're reflecting on many of the people that you come in contact with, you were wondering how many times again you would have to answer that question, how are you, and being able to navigate that. You talk about many really special individuals that you had unique relationships with, your mother, other individuals. You talk about startups. Why don't you share with us one of those stories of your interactions in changing with people as you change yourself?
The one that comes to mind in particular was the startup situation with my husband and I had a startup situation with a line of fashion accessories, and I went to see a fellow who was in a small town where I was living that was supposed to be helping me with some business and the raising of funds or business plans, and he was, because he had a different mentality from myself, I was a city girl, he was a guy from the country, I think he was offended by the person I was. When I proposed a business plan to him that I'd written and taken weeks to do it and was very proud, he ripped strips off me and insulted me in such a way that I melted into a puddle of despair on the telephone with him when he was doing it. If it happened today, after what is almost 3 years, that would never happen because I've grown that much to be able to handle people like that. But those were the early days when I was vulnerable and I was trying things, and there were a lot of things that I did that I thought would be absolutely successful that weren't. And I had to learn with myself to come to terms with them and not become emotional when they didn't work out. And this was a part of my healing process. It was a part of my growth and being able to observe people for what they were and the reasons that people behave the way they do. Generally, it's something personal on their part, and I was taking everything far too personally in the early going.
Unfortunately, we only have time for just a couple more questions. Catherine, first I want to ask, where can we go to find out more information about your book or the many things we talked about here today?
You can buy the book on Amazon.com. All English-speaking sites under Amazon are selling the book. It's available in soft copy and in an e-book, and also being sold internationally in Europe and so on, and on different sites, and I don't know why, because it's only written in English. And on my website, I do have an excerpt of the book. The prologue is on there. That's CatherineWebster.com.
All right. Final question. So you are a changed person. You've written a book. You have, in a lot of ways, done the things that you never thought you would do when you went ahead and first entered that institution of marriage. If you were to go back and time travel and have a conversation with yourself after you had just lost your spouse, what would that conversation be like?
What an interesting question. I would probably tell myself, because in the early going, I was almost ready to give up. I many times said to myself, I can't take this anymore. I'm finished. Probably I would say to myself, keep the faith, have faith in yourself and others around you, and also in a much higher power than anything that you could imagine, and just go day by day, and don't worry about next week or next month. Just do the best you can today, and do all the things, try all the things that you ever wanted to do, because now is the time to embrace them.
All right. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest. We've been talking with Catherine Webster. She is author of the book, Becoming Madam Widow. Thank you so much for coming on today, Catherine.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that will do it today for Community Focus. This is Matt and I wishing you all the very best in Burlington and beyond.